think we'll start the city council meeting if we could, please. Again, we will start with a moment of silence followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Crawford, would you please call the roll?
Certainly. We have Mike Hill.
Here.
Sonia Hurd.
Here.
Eric Lewis.
Here.
Ryan Lopez.
Here.
Richard May.
Present.
And Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Eric Davidson requested to be excused.
Could I have a motion to excuse Eric Davidson, please?
I motion.
Seconder?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? It's passed 6-0. Before we go on, I want to officially welcome Eric Lewis to the City Council. He was appointed at the last meeting 2 weeks ago, and he's now on the City Council. So, again, welcome.
And he's going to fix all of the town's problems.
So the first item on our agenda is to recognize Lieutenant Michael Munden. So, Sam, I can do it here. Michael, do you want to come up? Yeah, come on up.
Michael, I want to congratulate you on finishing one chapter of this life of yours and starting on another. And trust me, the second chapter is equally fun, maybe even more fun. So, are these not going?
Oh, there you go.
I hate to say this, but is working and playing really done this for you?
Wow.
He looks so young when he's sad. And this is the one that I like. So thank you for your years of service and dedication to the city of Plainton. So just for the crowd, in 1991, Michael Munden was a reserve police officer in Aguilar in Colorado. He then became a full-time police officer for Raton Police Department in Raton, New Mexico. And then he came to Blaine in 1999, where he has risen up the ladder from officer to sergeant to lieutenant and interim chief and filled them all with distinction and honor and really helped to keep our city safe. He's 12 years as a police canine handler, and this is what I really like, and he founded the program. So, unfortunately, we don't have it anymore, but I know everybody misses that. So he's also a graduate of Northwest University School of Police Staff and Command. So again, a very distinguished service and just a member of the community. And we're going to miss you, but we know you're going to enjoy whatever you do. So.
Yeah, it's been my honor and my privilege to work for the citizens here.
Thank you.
I'll just add one more thing real quick. I've been in law enforcement for over my 29th year, all of it in Whatcom County, and Lieutenant Munden is well known and well respected throughout law enforcement with every agency in this county, not just the city of Blaine. One of the most exciting parts for me in coming to Blaine was being able to get to work with Lieutenant Munden. I've known him for a long time. We've had a lot of laughs together, and all that started long before I came here, and it was just exciting to come here. So thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you. you to the officers for coming to support him today as well. Wait a few minutes if they want to move. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the Gordon Thomas Honeywell Government Relations Legislative Update. Brianna Murray, thank you very much for coming.
Absolutely. Good evening, Mayor. Good evening, Council. It's a pleasure to be here. It was a beautiful fall drive north to give this presentation to you this evening. I want to start by just doing a little bit of introduction. We shouldn't need too much introduction. We're starting on our eighth year working with the City of Blaine. I'm a partner with Gordon Thomas Honeywell Government Relations, and I have a broad team that works with me. You all have seen Holly Sanabria in recent years. She is transitioning to being a policy analyst on our team, which we're really excited about. It means she, however, will not be on the ground in Olympia. She's going to be behind her computer screen working from home and doing a little bit of family planning. In her shoes, you're going to see Emily Shea. Emily Shea has been lobbying in Olympia for the past 3 years, and I'm really excited to have her joining my team from the Association of Washington Business. This evening, she's on vacation, as is Holly, so you'll get stuck with me. We're really excited to continue working with all of you, and the goal of my presentation this evening is to help prepare you for the 2025 legislative session. There's three components to the presentation that I have for you. The first is to go over what you might want to expect during the 2025 session, recognizing that some of it is reading political tea leaves. The second is reviewing a draft 2025 legislative agenda that is on your council agenda for action later this evening, and then talk about next steps on how to move that legislative agenda forward for the beginning of the next legislative session on January 13th. So first, what can we expect during the 2025 session? We're starting to see a puzzle get filled in with lots of different pieces on what to expect. One of those big puzzle pieces will come with next week's November general election. The state will get a new governor for the first time in many, many years, a new attorney general, a new commissioner for public lands, and there are several other state executive branch offices that you likely noticed were on your ballot. The legislature is also likely to see significant turnover. Over 18 of our existing legislators chose not to seek re-election to their current seats. With that being said, and with all that turnover, we're not likely to see a significant political shift. Right now, Democrats have the majority in both chambers, 58-40 in the House, 29-20 in the Senate. It's possible that Democrats could gain a supermajority in one or both of those chambers, depending on how the election results for next week go. That's notable, so if you see it in the media that does or does not happen, that's notable because a supermajority is needed in order to issue new bonds. Historically, capital and transportation efforts have been bipartisan because bonds need to be issued to support those budgets, making them a more bipartisan effort. So if you see that Democrats get a supermajority, it is a noteworthy action because less activity is mandated to be bipartisan. Several Democrats have been asked in public whether or not they would maintain that bipartisan spirit, and they have said yes, but it's unclear whether they would do so in the same manner. You'd also note that there are four initiatives on your ballot. One of those is regarding natural gas and is largely policy-oriented. The other three have significant budget implications. First is an initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, which was the primary funding source between the most recent 2022 transportation package. The second is making the Long-Term Care Act optional to participate in, which would create a significant funding shortfall for that program that the legislature would need to grapple with. And the third is to repeal capital gains on gains over $250,000, which generates revenue to fund the capital budget, particularly construction in the education field. If any one of those initiatives pass, the legislature is going, this next session, going to need to focus on how to balance a budget in light of the fiscal implications of those initiatives. This upcoming session is the first year of the two-year legislative cycle. It's a long legislative session and is scheduled to last 105 days. Their task is to develop three different budgets, an operating, capital, and transportation budget. That has, each of those budgets has a two-year fiscal year. They'll develop that budget in the long session. They'll make modifications to that budget in the short session. The operating budget is the one you hear about most frequently in the media. It funds all K through 12 education. It also funds all state agencies. It is anticipated to have an approximately $5 billion shortfall, which is largely caused by flattening or slightly decreasing revenues and significantly rising costs. That is regardless of whether anything occurs with the initiatives. So that's assuming that none of the initiatives pass. That number gets much larger if one of those three initiatives I highlighted pass. The transportation budget has been facing shortfalls in recent years. As I mentioned, the most recent transportation package is funded with the Climate Commitment Act. Even if the Climate Commitment Act is upheld, the transportation budget is facing shortfalls in how to deliver all of the projects that have been committed to be delivered over the next 16 years. The reason is because when the package was initially put together, the cost estimates for those projects were $1 amount, and they are now a much larger dollar amount without a corresponding increasing revenue source. The gas tax has continued to decline and to decline at a sharper rate than what was originally anticipated when those transportation packages were developed. The capital budget is the most stable of the three budgets. It is funded with bonds that a portion of the operating budget is dedicated to pay off. It is not likely to substantially change in size, regardless of initiative. It is also where most local and community projects are funded and where the Blaine community has received a fair amount of funding in recent years. So it is with that context that I encourage you to think about the upcoming legislative session and the draft legislative agenda that's included in your materials this evening. You'll notice that the legislative agenda is broken into two components, funding requests and policy issues. For the funding requests, these are items that we would really focus on within each of the budgets, particularly transportation and capital. The policy issues are areas where we are likely to be engaging with other stakeholders, weighing in on bills as they're introduced, and in some cases trying to advance some proactive change. The funding requests include restoration of Blaine Harbor, which is envisioned to be a request that we would work on in partnership with the Port of Bellingham. I recently was in contact with the Port of Bellingham's lobbyists. They are several weeks away from developing and adopting their legislative agenda, so you all are ahead of them. They had not yet decided for certain whether they would be advancing a funding request for Blaine Harbor, so it's possible that we may come back to you at a later time and based on how their process goes and modify this item. But at this point, this statement envisions us in partnership with the Port of Bellingham requesting funding for Blaine Harbor and restoration of Blaine Harbor this upcoming session. We haven't identified a specific funding amount. This would be a request that is made within the capital budget, and capital budget appropriations on average are between $800,000 and $1.2 million. So we would aim to fall within that range. The next item is an item we've been working on for many years together, and that is to address train and vehicle delays at Bell Road. You all have received a race grant and state investment that will cover 30% of design for that project. We will continue to look for funding opportunities to keep that project moving forward. The third request is an operating budget request. I'll note that is the budget that had the $5 billion budget deficit in it, so this is a challenging request. However, it is something that does seem to be important to more than just the city of Blaine. As you all are likely very aware, the Nooksack Watershed is going through the water adjudication process, and the city is incurring legal costs for participating in that process. Blaine is not alone. There are other small cities within the basin experiencing those same costs, so we would be asking for the state's financial assistance to help in navigating that process financially without there being an impact on other city services. Moving on to the policy issues that are included in your draft agenda. The first one is affordable housing, and specifically asking the state to look at ways of reducing the cost of constructing housing, and to also look at changing various programs that are already in existence to allow them to be more effective in providing housing throughout the state. That includes looking at modifications to the current Connecting Housing Infrastructure Program, or CHIP program. The next item is a proposal to change the criteria on what small cities can receive grants from the Transportation Improvement Board's small city account. My recommendation to you this evening is that when you take action on your legislative agenda, that you remove this item from the proposal. The reason is, since this draft was produced, I had an opportunity to have a really great conversation with the Executive Director of the Transportation Improvement Board, and he shared with me that when a city advances out of the small city account, the population threshold goes up, you are then eligible to participate in an arterial preservation account, and in the region that you all are in, that account is less competitive than if you were down in the small city's account. So after greater due diligence, this doesn't seem like a policy to advance forward that would be beneficial to the Blaine community. We ask you to strike it as you advance as you approve the legislative agenda. The next item is a proposal that we would advance forward proactively along with other similar stakeholders. It calls on the state to align the federal Family and Medical Leave Act with the state Paid Family Medical Leave Act, so that they run concurrently. In state law, it actually says in the RCW that those two leaves should run concurrently. However, the way Department of Labor and Industries is interpreting and applying the law, they're allowing them to be run consecutively, which means that leave is much longer than what was otherwise intended by the plain language of the RCW. So along with other stakeholders, we would be elevating and raising that issue for the legislature's discussion and consideration this next session. The next item is asking the state for assistance for small cities in complying with the Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA. CETA mandates that the state transition to 100% clean electricity by 2045. And there are several key milestones that have to be met along the way. As an electric utility, the City of Blaine has to comply with that in the same way that other large electric utilities have to comply with it, but the city doesn't have the same level of resources. So this is asking for any additional tools, resources, and support to better assist the city in meeting those compliance obligations. The next item is regarding the Public Records Act, and asking for the state to recognize that there's significant administrative resources that have to be dedicated for both staff and legal fees to comply with the Public Records Act and support for either making changes or otherwise providing resources to meet those obligations. The next item is in support of regional or community partner, the Blaine School District, which is facing a significant revenue shortfall due to changes in the state funding model. And asking for the state to correct and increase the amount of funding allocated to the Blaine School District and school districts across the state. The next item is responding to substance abuse and urging the legislature to allocate necessary funds for public defense, prosecution, alternative court programs, and treatment initiatives to support the state's new policy on controlled substance possessions. And finally, asking for the state to continue to fund state shared revenues. These are state revenues that are collected, and then a portion is shared out to cities on a per capita or formulaic basis. In addition to the policy issues that are outlined, we also participate on your behalf in the activities of the Association of Washington Cities. You all have the Association of Washington Cities priorities before you. We engage in those issues in areas where it makes sense with the Blaine community. Some of the issues the association works on are targeted maybe toward a larger jurisdiction or a very dense urban jurisdiction, we really look for those areas where there's commonality with the Bladen community to partner with the association to advance your interests. I would just direct you to their legislative priorities. I'm not going to go through them in detail, given that I just went through your own agenda in great detail. The next steps is later this evening, you have a draft legislative agenda for your consideration for adoption. Once you've adopted it, we will begin advocating for those priorities outlined therein. We have the November general election next week. Now, the legislature, after that November general election, will begin organizing themselves for the 2025 legislative session. They will hold legislative committee days the week of December 9th, where they'll select different committee chairs, committee membership, leadership, and then the legislative session will begin on January 13th. Bills can begin being pre-filed on December 1st. They're not formally introduced until that first day of session, but a lot of activity starts to ramp up starting in December. I just tossed a lot of information at you. I'm happy to answer any questions. I am planning for a long drive south, so if you have questions on the legislative agenda, I'd ask for you to ask them now, even though it's not until later on the agenda for your action. City manager, is there anything I missed? Any questions for Brianna?
I was just interested, what are you seeing as the top policy priorities with the cities that you currently represent?
Great question. Yeah, so our firm represents several different cities across the state. A lot of it is consistent with the Association of Washington City's priorities. Most communities have identified some sort of capital funding need, given that that's the most stable of the budgets. There's a few different proposals that are floating around various very specific changes to the Public Records Act based on local community instances, disclosures that have occurred in the last 18 months. There is a fairly significant interest in looking for increased funding for local transportation preservation and maintenance, which is another item on the infrastructure investments. Your statement on affordable housing is very similar to what other communities are considering, as is the responding to substance abuse statement and state shared revenues.
Any further comments, questions? Thank you very much for coming.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to see you all this evening, and let's go.
On the card attacks thing, what do they think? I mean, I guess.
You want me to predict the outcome of an election up here?
Yeah.
You want me to make it to my car?
No, I just went in there and we didn't vote, right?
So I think you're referring to the Climate Commitment Act, so referred to as carbon pricing or cap and trade system. I'll give you a few facts, let you...
If that went away. What would happen?
It was a significant funding source for the Move Ahead Washington Transportation Package. So anything that was funded with that Move Ahead Washington Transportation Package would go away. The legislature also made a fairly large number of investments through the capital and operating budgets this last session that were tied specifically to the rejection of the initiative. It is instead approved, all of those appropriations don't go into effect. There's several other clean energy-oriented programs, environmental justice programs that have all been stood up since the Climate Commitment Act was in place, and those would all end as well. There's also, I mean, I could go on about how the different credits would be treated and everything, but maybe best to follow up offline on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a safe ride.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next, we're going on to two public hearings having to do with the budget. So, Ms. Vidal, are you going to start us off by just introducing them? I'll just say generally, person speaking on public hearing topic only will be allowed 5 minutes. Additional non-repetitive testimony will be allowed after all testimonies have been heard, and written testimony can be sent to the City Council by 3:30 p.m. will also be included in the record, and it gives the address to that. We don't have a sign-in sheet today, so that we just, as you want to come up and speak, just raise your hand after Ms. Vidal has give us the update on this.
Can I confirm what you just said there, that public testimony today must pertain to property tax or budget, the paperwork that the city's moving for?
Public hearing.
That's the only thing that the testimony should relate to.
Yep.
Thank you. The property tax ordinance will be brought in full at the next meeting. Some additional information need prior to.
You're good.
Yep. Oh, okay. There's additional information needed from the county prior to completing that ordinance, and it was received today. As part of the ordinance for the 2025 budget, it is as presented. We've had 3 working sessions regarding the 2025 budget to cover all of the funds for the city. The first was a public works discussion. The second was for the general fund, and the third was for the remaining funds. There were a few changes that were made to the budget after presenting it to the council, and those are also included on page 4 of the 2025 proposed budget. They mainly have to do with the calculation of the interfund transfers. So there are various in government accounting, every fund must pay for the work that it does. So if for example, this finance stores some records over at the Public Works building, which is owned by the electric department, and so finance needs to pay for the use of that space. Utility billing is paid for out of the general fund. How utility billing obviously benefits all of the enterprise funds. That's how they get their money. So utility billing needs to get allocated back out to the various funds. And so there were some just adjustments to what that interfund transfer amount was after all the calculations came through. And then there were a couple of items that we moved to be funded out of more restricted funds. The library HVAC replacement to be moved out of, to be expended instead of the general fund to a general fund that is just for capital expenditures. And then the Tyler implementation cost to also be moved to a fund out of general fund capital expenditures, which is where the cost is currently being expended from. So we want to use our most restricted funds first. So those adjustments were made, and there's a schedule of those changes in there. Otherwise, it is as presented.
Okay, so we will start.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time to present this or not, but this information just came to me today, and that is the senior center is experiencing some significant problems with their plumbing, and the estimates for the repairs came in at $18,000. So I don't know that any of that would be covered in the budget we discussed, but I just want to give you a heads up, because you may not hear about this for weeks and weeks. That it's going to happen this year. They have water welling up through the floor in their kitchen, and the bathrooms need significant repairs.
Mr. Harmon.
We will work with the senior center. As Councilman Hurd said, this is news to us. We have a general amount of maintenance repair in the budget. We'll take a look at it. Perhaps we can tackle that this year. Perhaps we come back to you with a budget amendment. Don't know yet, but we'll work with the senior center to figure that out. I would say we still proceed with the budget as presented, and then we'll come back to council if needed at a later time with a budget amendment.
Okay, so the first part is the 2025 property tax. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to speak on that? If so, please raise your hand. Okay, I will close the public hearing on the property tax And we'll move on to the public hearing on the 2025 budget. Again, if there's anyone who would like to come up and speak on the 2025 budget, you have 5 minutes to speak. Okay, I will close the public hearing on the 2025 budget.
I appreciate the public's confidence in us on those two issues.
We will move on now to the consent agenda. Items listed below will be enacted by one motion. If separate discussion is desired on an item, that item may be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda at the request of a council member. Approval of bills, $478,906.74. Approval of October 14th, 2024 City Council minutes. Could I have a motion to accept the consent agenda, please? Seconder?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? That is passed 6-0. Now we move on to the council action items. The number one item is Resolution 1958-24, finding administratively developed electrical utility construction requirements and associated form agreements consistent with Titles 13 and 17 of the Blaine Municipal Code and directing city staff to review the Blaine Municipal Code for potential need for additional clarification. Mr. Gandy, please.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council members. So this is an agreement for design of electrical infrastructure. Basically what it is that when the subdivisions comes, new development comes in, right, we have to actually go and put new services for them. And this is kind of becoming crucial for us because there are a lot of parts that needs to be pre-ordered as a lag time of around 115 weeks, right? 2 years to 3 years. And what happens if we order those parts and the subdivisions go ahead? So we are trying to. So basically, this version outlines the components of the agreement for design of electrical equipments between the city of Blaine as the owner and the proponent. In designing this whole agreement, we reviewed utilities providing other cities like Ellensburg, Richland, and Port Angeles. The closest one that we found was related to us was city of Ellensburg. And the whole document was prepared in, with the help of legal counsel. So the agreement overview is like, it's the agreement between the city of Blaine and the proponent or the project developer. So the purpose of it is to design the electrical infrastructure for the proposed development, subdivision, plan, or building. This agreement will be effective for 6 years from the date of execution. So the city will design the electrical distribution system at the expense of the proponent or the developer. The design cost will be based on the staff hourly hour and based on the actual cost. So basically, if we do a design, if we say, okay, you know what, it's going to cost us $1 million to do the whole design, and the actual comes to 1.5, we will be charging 1.5 and not $1 million. And the payment for the design is non-refundable. If you look at this one, so city will prepare a list of specialty materials that needs to be pre-ordered. So once we prepare the list, we make the estimate, we tell the developer to come and pay a deposit 20%. So he comes, gives the 20% deposit, we go ahead and order the material. Once we order the material, and when we receive the material, we ask them to come pay the 100% of the material cost within 30 days. So once the final material is paid off, then the city goes and start installing the whatever material we have ordered for. In case if the material we have procured and for any reason the development doesn't go off, right, we refund only 80% of the total cost. We keep back 20%. The second option is we will return 80% and use the material into our other developments or you know, wherever city needs to use that one. So city owns that material. So the refund process of material is alternate purpose, wherever, like I said, like if we needed to use it for any other development or within city projects, we use it. Refund equals to 80% of the total material cost or replacement cost, whichever is lower. And all refund rights expire after 6 years of agreement from the factory date. So if we sign an agreement today, and after 6 years, right, they don't develop anything, the rules are gone. They still have to comply with the city electrical utility construction requirement. It's mandatory. And city retains authority for development approvals. So they still have to go through the BMCs and within the city standards, whatever electrical standards are. The conclusion is to establish a framework for the design and construction of electrical infrastructure for our new developments within the projects today, ensuring collaboration between the city and project proponent. Any questions?
I have a few. Is there any concern of the city taking on these additional responsibilities for design and material pre-ordering? And then ultimately, who's going to be taking on this additional workload?
We are already doing it actually right now, but without an agreement. So basically, if we are trying to order materials and the development doesn't go ahead, then it gets a part of our inventory and reduces the time and money, whatever we have spent.
Okay. And from a developer standpoint, has there been any grumblings, any pushback with this idea?
I haven't heard back anything like that.
And then lastly, is this process similar to when developers install our water, sewer, and stormwater, or is this maybe an opportunity for us to look at those processes as well and update accordingly?
It will be similar to the other utilities too.
I just want to jump in there, Dave. It is different for electric. For the water, sewer, and stormwater streets, the developer works with a third-party consultant to design those. In this particular case, we would work with a third-party consultant for electric. To your question on city staff, we would not be designing this in-house. It's something that we would enter into this agreement with the developer, procure or get a cost from an electrical design engineer, share that cost with the developer, and then agree upon whatever that agreement looks like to pay that cost moving forward. So the city staff would not be designing the electrical facilities for development.
I think we better really look at this hard because, remember, we got 30% less electrical rate than anybody. So if we're starting to, we want to draw these big industrial sites for electricity, that's a huge draw. And I think that's a huge draw for the city to have that 30 cents less, or 30% less cost, especially when you're coming into warehousing and stuff like that, because that will drive them here more. I mean, nobody else in the county's got what we got.
Well, remember, we do have that increase coming.
What's that?
We do have an increase coming, so it won't be 30%.
Anymore. It's going to be 31.
Don't we have something like a 17% increase?
Go ahead. 17.5% is in the stormwater. Water utility. On the electric side, I believe it's closer to 5%. And then to Councilmember Hill's point, I can't tell you the exact gap, but what I can tell you is that Puget Sound Energy has increases to their rates that are greater than what we're taking. And so that gap likely will get wider, unverified, but that's my projection or prediction, is that gap will actually get a little bit wider.
Even 45%. I mean, to a cold storage, that could be $10,000 a month.
Yeah, if that's their main expense. Yeah.
Is this common, the proposal that we have there, is that common to all the other cities? Do they essentially do the same thing, require a deposit, and then only refund 80% if the project doesn't go through?
Looking at this is the basic common stuff that other cities are also doing.
Any further questions? Okay. Staff recommends approval of resolution 1958-24. I have a motion to approve resolution 1958-24.
I'll make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion before we vote? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? That is passed 6-0.
Narrative. Could I have one clarifying comment on the action? Our goal is to get our inventory in a position where we won't have to pre-order these items. That's our goal. A lot of cities, let's take Ellensburg. We looked at Port Angeles, Richland, and Ellensburg. They've got the inventory on the ground, and so when a developer comes in and wants 10 75 kV transformers, they've already got it. They don't have to pre-order it. In our case, because our inventory is almost non-existent, we've got to order these things, and as Director Gandhi said, they've got a lead time of a year, sometimes longer. So this agreement to pre-order is probably, I would say, somewhat unique to Blaine, because we don't have the inventories to serve our development today, but our plan is to get us there. I've directed staff, order inventories, because A, we need it for disaster, B, it's good to have on the ground just in terms of inflation, a hedge on inflation, and see it makes this relationship when we go to install this work better with the developer. That's where we plan to be.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Moving on. Ordinance 24-3019, Central Business Waterview Text and Map Amendment. Mr. Wenger.
Yes, thank you, Council. I will be presenting this proposal and the Planning Commission's recommendation. So, the proposal is a zoning text and map amendment to increase the height limit in the Waterview 36 district from 36 feet as measured from the street up to 48 feet. The area that this proposal affects is just the Waterview District depicted on the screen up there, and it basically runs from F Street down to essentially Chattatai Restaurant on the west side of Peace Portal Drive. The text amendment is rather minor in nature. It basically just crosses out the 36 and replaces it with a 48, so there really is not a lot to see with new text. The map amendment is also very similar, where the 36 on the zoning map is replaced with a 48. So not very exciting. But I would point out that on the very north side of the city, the Central Business Market 48 district extends on over to the west side of Peace Portal. So that is the area for Gateway 1890 Tap House down to, I believe it's called the Drayton Harbor Building, right across from Edeline Dairy. That block is about 430 feet in length, and that area already allows zoning to go up to 48 feet, or buildings to go up to 48 feet in that zoning district. The Waterview District is about 1,330 feet in length, so that is the area that's being impacted. That's approximately about 53% of the west side of Peace Portal Drive. So just a little bit over half of the area on the west side of Peace Portal Drive is being impacted. That remaining area south of the Chattatai Restaurant down to the edge of the Central Business District is currently Central Business Garden 36. That area is not included in the proposal and would remain at 36 feet. That's about 30% of the west side of Peace Portal Drive. The Planning Commission had a number of height renderings produced by Haven Design, so this is what a 48-foot tall building could look like. This is an example of another building. This is actually the newsroom building in Linden. This building is approximately 41 and a half feet, I believe. So this would not be allowed in a 36 building height district, but it would be allowed under 48 feet. And so, yeah, there's the 41 feet, 8 inches tall. City of Linden Planning Department sent us the project the building plans, and so we were able to confirm that height limit down to the inch there. We also, the Planning Commission looked at just a view analysis, so this truck is a good example that you can't see over a one-story building. We did a bunch of other view analysis that we compared a four-story, 48-foot building to a three-story, 36-foot building. And just this little exercise says, you know, if you're standing on the top, you can see over that building a little better, but really the only views you're protecting are from that fourth floor. And then when you're looking over the other building on the third, across the street that's three stories tall, there could be another number of obstacles in your way, you know, air handling units, an elevator tower, other things can be up there. So your view corridor when looking out, just doing some geometry, is about a 2% window down from the horizon. So you may not be able to, you might be able to see the horizon, but you probably can't see the masts on the ships in the harbor. Planning Commission looked at different types of construction. So this kind of came, the 5/1 or 5/2, you know, wood framing over concrete podium. We looked at height limits in similar jurisdictions. These are some examples from Fairhaven and Port Townsend. There's a number of jurisdictions with height limits that we took from the Central Business District on the webpage here, so a lot more information. We looked at our design standards and how they apply. We basically have three different types of commercial store frontage requirements. Yes, Councilmember Hurt.
Oh, could you back up one slide to Port Townsend?
Yes.
Okay, looking at the marina in the upper right-hand corner, do you happen to know what the height is of those light, kind of like tangerine-colored buildings?
I believe it says it on there, but I am not able to read that from where I'm sitting.
Anybody up there? Do you have to read it?
These two? Anybody at the top right?
Top right. Is that L-shaped building and then the...
buildings? 34
feet, that one.
37,
34, 40, 36, and 40. Thank you. Because I just want to say that it appears as though they have higher building heights away from one of the major views, the marina, and they decrease in the view area.
All right, thank you. So moving through our review with the Planning Commission, we looked at our design standards, the City of Blaine design standards, where we have three different types of commercial building frontages required. You know, there is a storefront shown in red, kind of a mixed-use area on those other streets in orange, and then the landscape requirement, which is kind of more residential, shown in green. We also were able to talk briefly about a project that Econ Northwest is doing where we looked at three different types of construction that could occur, kind of more of like a fourplex, a mid-level apartment, and then a mixed use. The preliminary findings of their report, which was paid for by Sustainable Connections out of Bellingham, was that the mixed use type of development that we require in the Waterview District and some of our other central business districts is very far from what I'm going to call, you know, penciling out. In other words, it wouldn't pay for itself. Even if we did a number of other things to incentivize that type of development, even potentially giving them a low interest construction loan, still it made it very challenging for those types of kind of residential over commercial development to occur. In addition to that, the Transpo group completed a summer parking study where they looked at parking inventory in August and found very similar results actually to February which was somewhat surprising, but they did it on two different days with multiple hours every day. All of those results can be found on the project webpage. And so talking to the Planning Commission, these are some of the rationale to get to staff's recommendation to the Planning Commission. Just to be clear, you know, this is not about affordability or really self-dealing to developers. This is about fixing a core piece of our downtown zoning that doesn't work. We have not been able to, we have not seen any development on the west side of Peace Portal that is at least a new building in decades. So we've had, you know, multiple meetings with developers, and it's far from being able to pencil on that side of the street. And so we have this issue where we're requiring something to be built that's not affordable to build. I'm not talking about, you know, affordable housing. I'm talking about a development being affordable to build.
It says when you have branding, or is it referring to Blaine by the Sea?
Yeah, so I'm getting to that. So, you know, we do have a vision for downtown in our comprehensive plan. We have design standards. I touched on those. You know, we do have a plan for downtown. We have branding. There is the Blaine by the Sea branding. This really did go through quite a robust public process. You know, we talked about this with our downtown ad hoc advisory committee for quite some time. This went in front of the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission talked about it several different times. The Planning Commission elected to move forward with a parking relief proposal, which was later approved by council, and then they came back and talked about this downtown height proposal at least three different times, I think over about 4 months. And so, you know, all those are public meetings. We're encouraged public comment. We had a couple different public hearings over that process. And there was also a consideration of different alternatives, such as increasing the height limit 12 feet across the entire central business district. Talked about some different zoning or different subzones. You know, maybe the Water View, maybe the Market District should be increased to 12, an additional 12 feet. But this is what the, you know, selected alternative was of the Planning Commission, just to limit it to the Water View District. And then lastly, I'd point out, you know, council did ask for and had this docketed several times. So this is the proposal now that we're bringing back after all that work to the city council. So the Planning Commission voted 4-1 to recommend approval of the proposed text amendment. Staff is required to deliver the Planning Commission's recommendation. Council should not deliberate today, but set a time in the future. We're recommending November 12th, the next City Council meeting. And then when you do get to that meeting, if that's what you choose to do, is hear this at your next meeting, you have a number of options, which are listed up on the screen. I mean, of course, you can just approve it. You can modify within the scope of the application. And what I mean by that is you could say, you know what, 12 feet's a little much. We'd prefer 10. That would be within the scope. Or maybe you want to make it maybe 20. I mean, that's reasonable, maybe. Yes, might be pushing it a little bit. But you couldn't say, well, we want to increase the entire central business district by 12 feet because we haven't provided notice of that. So if you do deviate from the Planning Commission's recommendation, you should determine that the public interest would be better served by doing that, and then you should schedule a new public hearing. So as a legislative item, if you want to schedule a public hearing, council can do that. Another option would be just to remand this back to the Planning Commission. You could say, Planning Commission, we want you to fix something. You have to give them direction so they know what they're doing, but you can kick this back to the Planning Commission and have them work on it some more. And then, of course, the last option, you could just deny it. And I believe that concludes my presentation.
I was told that the Planning Commission recommended it with a modification.
No.
No modifications, no. Exactly as it was presented to them. Okay. More misinformation out in the community.
Mr. Weiner, would we be able to get copies of the Transpo and Eco Northwest reports?
Absolutely, yes. I believe they're pasted on the website, but actually, I'm sorry, the Econ Northwest report, I don't think we have a final yet, just a preliminary. I can try to hunt that down and get it to the council, though.
Yeah, if you could, that'd be great.
Any further discussion? So could we have a motion to set a meeting date to discuss the proposed text amendment. Staff recommends the next regularly scheduled meeting on November the 12th, 2024. I so move. Seconded?
Second.
All those in favor? We're just moving to set a date to actually vote on this. No. We have to have two readings later. Any further discussion before we take a vote on it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Pass 6-0.
And that council meeting would be Tuesday the 12th, because we're not meeting on Monday due to the holiday.
Correct.
I do have concerns, though, that we may have only six people. So there is a possibility of a tie with the RSVP problem.
Let's go.
Okay, moving on to the Plumber Transportation, Mr. Gandy.
Mayor, if you'd like, Greg Burke's here, and yes, he's been working with the transport company and the shipwright that will fix the blower. So if you would allow, we'd like to yield the floor to Mr. Burke.
Happily.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. When we last left the story, we were trying to fix it locally, and the damage was too much. We would have loved to have driven the vessel to Bellingham, but that's not going to be an option. We're going to drive it, but on the highway. And that's what the motion today is for. But we wanted to, before we really came to you with that, we wanted to have a plan. And so we had a shipwright inspect it, and I believe the report was provided today, but you may not have had time to review that. But the keys in here is a wooden vessel is a couple of things, but it's like the old game of Tetris or a jigsaw puzzle. You got to put it together a particular way. You can't just, with the way it was cut right now, it wouldn't go back together that way. And so we needed to get it to Bellingham. We have a very good shipwright that comes to us highly recommended that's going to take the time over the winter to fix it right. Also, he did take a look at it and said, okay, we think the previous repairs are okay, but he really needs to get into it and he really needs to get through the vessel. And the goal here is, you know, there are different options, you know, but the goal here is to keep a wooden vessel in the water. Once it's fixed, keep it there from then on, as long as you can. You really don't want them out of it, especially during the winter. So from that, my plan, or our plan that we're asking you to approve, is that you would say, okay, we're going to transport it, and then I will send the shipwright report to the Coast Guard, but the Coast Guard is going to have to approve the Coast Guard inspected vessel. And he will fix it over the winter, and I've told him that we really want it back in March. And the reason we want it back in March is we have to train all the captains and the crews, and we want to make sure that by the time the weather is good to go, that we are operating the vessel. And then from there, you know, we continue to operate the vessel. And we come up with different plans on how to operate the vessel within the limits of the Coast Guard requirements.
Any questions?
I have a question, but it's not actually related to getting it repaired. It's about staffing it. There were volunteers before that worked as crew. Is there a way that we could advertise to see if those volunteers are still interested in coming back?
We are surprisingly overrun with volunteers to be the crew members. So I don't think that's going to be an issue to do that. We really need, I think that there's a lot of opportunities with the plumber. We've had a lot of discussions about how to get the tickets, how to do that. I think that the key is to get it operational. Once the community sees it operational again, I don't anticipate any shortage of crew members, and I have talked to some of the previous crew members. I don't think that they do want to volunteer. So again, we have to make sure that now that it's being operated by the city, that they have a volunteer agreement and that they're meeting all of those different requirements, and we'll see if they do that. But also, you must pass a Coast Guard drug test. So those are the things that we're going to have discussions on.
Any further discussion? If not, any further from the city's point of view, Mr. Harmon?
Mayor, I would just say that a motion to approve the transport is essentially supporting the repair of the plumber. So it wouldn't make any sense to transport it and not repair it. So we would ask for consideration of both tonight, if council's willing.
I'd like to move that the council approve transporting the plumber to Bellingham for repair and to do those repairs as described in the prior email.
Second.
Yeah. Any further discussion?
So is this motion, what she just said, tied into a specific figure that we've been told?
Like
20,000. Okay.
How much?
If the motion goes up to 20,000 and does not approve any further than that, that's what we're voting on, huh?
We haven't specified the actual number because I don't think we know until.
The motion is just fix it at whatever it costs. I think that a little more detail would need to go into this motion.
Well, I think maybe we could say fix it up to a certain value, and if it's over that, then come back to council.
I think that would be prudent.
So, Mayor, the motion was moved and seconded. It belongs to the body. It would take somebody to amend the motion, perhaps putting a not to exceed on the motion, a vote on the amendment, and then a vote on the motion.
I move that we amend the motion to say to not exceed $20,000 without additional approval from council.
I second. Okay, so we'll vote on the amendment first.
Right.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay, so the amendment is passed 6-0. Now we'll vote on Ms. Hurt's original motion, which was seconded, I believe, then? Okay.
That is correct by Councilor Hill.
Okay, so all those in favor of the original amendment to transport the boat to Bellingham and fix the boat, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Good, 6-0. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If when they're taking down the I-5, they hit a bump and the whole thing turns into a bunch of splinters and it's like $300,000 or $400,000 to deal with, I don't want that to have been approved by the motion you're just making.
I agree. Okay. Moving on. This is the resolution 1957-24, 2025 legislative priorities, Mr. Harmon, and you may want to modify this.
Thank you, Mayor. What we would ask Council for is a motion to approve the priorities absent the language on the Transportation Improvement Board, and then allow staff the authority to remove the first action item or the first priority, which was in support of the Port of Bellingham's restoration of our port, in the event they choose not to lobby for that specific item. So approve the package as our request, less the TIB item, and then allow us administrative authority to remove the first action item or the first priority if Bellingham doesn't also support that in their request.
So are there any questions on any of these changes? Anybody have any questions on the priorities themselves? Okay, could I have a motion then to approve the resolution 1957-24?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is passed 6-0. Okay. Moving on then. Resolution 1955-24, adopting a public participation plan for the purpose of initiating the comprehensive plan. Mr. Wayne.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Staff is requesting Council make a motion to approve this resolution and kick off our public participation plan for updating our comprehensive plan. So the proposed public participation plan outlines a number of opportunities. I'll just summarize those briefly. We talked a little bit about them earlier this evening during our work session, but those include outreach to community organizations, website and social media updates. We would be developing a whole City of Blaine, you know, website for updating our comprehensive plan. Well, that would be like the repository of all the different pieces of information we develop. We would like to produce a series of community outreach videos, a notice mailing list, providing comment period, interested parties, news media, and a series of open houses, up to five open houses. The Planning Commission, of course, does a lot of work with the comprehensive plan update. I mean, if there's ever a reason to keep your Planning Commission around, this would be it. They'd do a tremendous amount of work, you know, meeting regularly through open public meetings. They would have a series of work sessions, potentially a retreat with council at the same time. And then, of course, City Council, you would be getting updates on this. You could have a couple work sessions along the way. There's a tentative participation timeline in at the bottom of the resolution. And if you wanted to, if you wanted us to include a utility bill mailer, you could potentially do that by modifying this public participation plan prior to taking action on it.
As in right now during this meeting would be the best time to have that in?
Yes.
Do we know roughly how much that would cost?
I actually don't. Would you do you know that?
Well, the city is mailing all of our electric customers an envelope that's already going. So just printing up like paper is very, very, very cheap. Wouldn't it be very affordable to just print up a little less piece of paper inviting them to that?
Wouldn't it essentially be what it cost to put the mayor's letter in?
As long as we're not adding sheets, it doesn't cost us anything extra. We can add that blurb about the comp plan process or whatever we want, as long as we stay to a sheet. When we add sheets, that costs, think of a single sheet around $500 to $800 per month, or excuse me, per mailing. But what Councilmember May is suggesting, I think, could easily be added.
Or do the existing paper that's already going, just adding more printed, different printed words on it.
Mayor.
Go ahead.
Yes, that's correct. I would just think we could do this for almost no cost.
Okay, good.
Okay. All right. Recommendation is that the council make a motion to approve Resolution 1955-24 adopting a public participation plan for the City of Blaine's comprehensive plan update process.
Are you making a motion right now?
No, he's saying what we should.
Okay, all right.
To approve the resolution adopting a plan, simply the plan.
Right. Okay, well, I'd like to make that motion with it amended to include an invitation to the various open houses or however the planning department would like to phrase it be included in the mailings that we put out as part of our utility bill. I would like to include that in the
original
in the motion.
Okay, I second. Okay, any further discussion? I think we can just vote on the motion as amended, yes. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? This is passed 6-0. Okay. And again, Mr. Wenger. Requesting City Council approve Resolution 1956-24 agreeing to preliminary growth figures for the comprehensive plan update.
Yes, again, these are preliminary growth numbers to get our comprehensive plan update process started. We would like to provide these to Whatcom County to start going through the, you know, the technical modeling to work on the overall forecast numbers. We will be coming back to council in a couple months with a non-binding resolution, which could further be changed. When we do that, we will also include housing allocation numbers. So tonight we're just talking about population and employment. And council can really pick any number between the low and the high. We are recommending the medium population projection of 2,774 and the high employment projection of 1,092. I would point out that the medium projection is historically the most accurate. The lower projection is kind of the take no action off alternative for continuing Whatcom County's growth rate. So if we pick the, or yeah, I'd be happy to answer any questions from there.
I'm asking all the person that was, are you ready for a motion?
I'll make the motion. We make it 3,500. Start there and go from there. So you guys can start at 35 and then cost you anymore. Unless, I honestly think we should go higher.
That's a good compromise. I second that motion.
What about the employment? Are you happy with the 1,092 for employment? Yeah? Everybody saying yes? Okay, so there is a...
Are these all in one motion, or are these one of...
Are they separate?
You could... Madam Mayor, yeah, I think one motion would be fine to approve both of these. If I could just make a comment on the population projection, perhaps. You know, basically going with this new number between medium and high, you're basically directing, you know, planning staff to figure out how to accommodate this extra housing.
Sure.
And then these folks over here are going to have to figure out how to pay for, you know, higher levels of service because we're going to have more people.
Understood.
So, you know, we'll...
This is a town with a long history of doing things like the water reclamation facility, which some thought was much more than we needed for the town we had back then, but we're going to be set for a long time. And so council may consider that we want to ramp things up a bit, and I support and second Councilmember Hill's motion.
So 3,500 there, and then high one on the other one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
1,092.
Any further discussion on this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Opposed. And that's passed 5-1. Okay. And then finally, Ms. Filey, you have your budget ordinance 24-3018, adopting the budget for fiscal year 2025. This is the first reading? Or is next session going to be the first reading? It's not on the council action items. I just got handed this.
This is the first reading, and then the second reading is at the next meeting.
Right. So all we're doing is just hearing this for the first reading, and then we'll have the second reading on November 12th.
Correct.
So do you want to comment on this at this time?
I don't have any additional comments outside of what I said before during the open public hearing portion.
So staff recommends that council have the second reading and approve ordinance 24-3018 to adopt the budget for fiscal year 2025 on November 12th, 2024. Do we have a motion for that, please?
A motion.
Seconded.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It's passed 6-0. Okay, that is council action item, and we will move on now to commission, committee, and board reports. So, Chief Funk, Civil Service Commission update, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Civil Service Commission, we met on the 22nd, and the primary purpose of that meeting was to certify the eligibility list for entry-level police officer. We are now doing continuous testing with public safety testing, so there's a need to modify the list pretty much almost every civil service meeting because we get people trickling in. So they certified that eligibility list.
Me? Questions for the chief? Thank you. Lane Tourism Advisory Committee update.
Yes, Madam Mayor and Council. The BTAC meets tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. So they'll be meeting right here, working on the budget, the city's tourism budget. So we presented three different budget alternatives to BTAC. And they have various options in there. One option essentially is to balance the budget, which would likely consist of closing the VIC and stopping funding for the Chamber of Commerce Executive Director position. The second option would be basically, I believe, 4 months of operation as we look for an exit plan for some of those things. And then the third option would be fully funding it throughout the year. So the BTAC committee's got some work cut out for them in the morning to kind of figure out what they'll be recommending to City Council. Of course, we'll bring their recommendation forward to Council, and Council will be the final authority on the budget, of course. And then there also will be a brief discussion on transferring events from the Blaine Chamber of Commerce to the Blaine Birch Bay Park and Rec District number 2.
Questions? Have we received any applications for our replacement positions on the VTAC?
I believe we have, Mr. Crawford.
Yes, we have.
One or two?
There's a few.
A few. I really expected to see those this evening, and I'm surprised. I was hoping they'd be in that meeting tomorrow. When do you anticipate they'll become before the board, or excuse me, City Council?
Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the closing date for all of our open board commission meetings, which includes BTAC as well as the Planning Commission, is the November 1st. So the closing date to receive those applications has not occurred yet, and as such, we weren't going to bring that forth. I anticipate either it will be brought to the council meeting on the 25th of November or the December 9th meeting for all BTAC as well as Planning Commission interviews.
Okay. Going on to department reports, City Manager, Mr. Harmon, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Two items tonight. Our friends at North Lockton Fire District have officially notified us that they may want to give us a fire station back. And so we'll be working with them conjointly and bringing options back to the council. Staff have taken a tour of it. This is the fire station out in the Semiahmoo area. And essentially what that agreement said between the city and the district many years ago is that it needed to be staffed, and that if it wasn't staffed, that the building may come back to the city. Essentially, the city has first right of refusal. And so the fire district has said, you know, due to a variety of budget constraints, it's not likely that facility will be staffed moving forward. And so they're asking the city officially if we want it. So staff will do some evaluation. We've got mixed thoughts on the building right now, but I think there's certainly some value there in terms of economic value. So we'll see. We'll bring you back something to consider and go from there.
With the savings to the fire department being that they're currently paying property tax on it and having to maintain it?
Madam Mayor, I don't want to speak for the fire department. I will say in our conversations, it seems like ongoing maintenance costs are a consideration. Mowing, housekeeping, electric bills, that kind of thing.
Do they have to pay us property tax on it?
I missed that.
Do they have to pay property tax on the building while owning it?
They have to make property tax.
I don't have that answer.
Oh, okay.
We can look into that, but I don't have that answer.
Do you have anything further?
One other item, Mayor, is that two council members have requested to present a PowerPoint presentation to the body at our next session. The mayor and I talked about that, and to be most fair to all council members, she's going to hold a study session at 4 o'clock to allow council members to present whatever they wish to choose to present on a particular topic. I know that may be a little bit confusing, but we don't know what the PowerPoint presentations are yet. But if you choose to make a presentation on downtown height amendment or whatever else may be relevant, you'll have an opportunity to do so at our next meeting at 4 p.m.
Yeah, I just request that if you inform Mr. Crawford of what the length might be so that we can appropriately adjust the time that is going to be needed for it. Okay, public works, Mr. Gandhi.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So opposite channelization project started on October 14th. That was the first day. They still have 75 days of total completion of the work time. Currently, the contractor has granted all the previous asphalt and working on the subbase course. They're trying to relocate the utilities and work with the fresh new utilities. So that's what the update right now is. Hello. Other update is North American cargo.
They are kind of
cross-border
shipping. They requested.
They have a lot of traders coming in to the town. So they have requested, and we have accommodated on the Redwood Avenue to unload their equipment out there. That's all.
Finance, final.
Great. I have three things to update the council on. The first is that the Tyler implementation for the financial portion is going well. We've brought in all of the data from prior years, and it's been verified in the software, and we're able to run reports and process accounts payable through there, and as well as cashiering for non-utility related payments. The year to date, we're 75% through the year through September, and our revenues in the general fund, we received 75% of those revenues, but that only includes the first half of property taxes. So we are expected to receive the second half of property taxes here in October, and finish the year better than, we're projected to finish the year better than budgeted in revenues. We're also projected in the general fund to finish the year higher in expenditures. We're 68% of the way through our expenditures, so we are less than the 75%. However, we do have some large expenditures coming up here in the fourth quarter. That includes the purchase of two new patrol cars, as well as the insurance renewal, which it's a 12-1 to 12-1 fiscal year for insurance, so December 1st to December 1st. And insurance is expected to renew at anywhere between 12% and 18%. So we don't have those final numbers in yet, but when we do get those numbers in, then that's going to be significantly more than what was budgeted. But we'll go ahead and we're going to be looking at where we're going to project it to finish for the end of the year, and we'll go ahead and we'll bring those budget amendments forward to the council as we get here into the fourth quarter. The last point is the Department of Revenue sales tax clawback. I originally reported that that was going to be 3 months at approximately $40,000 a month, and it's already 4 months at $40,000 a month, and I believe that there's a fifth month expected. So that puts our sales tax revenue, even though we've had these clawbacks, which are included in the figures for through September, we're still at 75% of our revenue, even though we've had this $160,000 clawback already, and it's anticipated that we're going to have another $40,000, and then hopefully that will be the end of the case. I have a call out to the Department of Revenue to speak with the case manager regarding that and get some final numbers so we can report back to the council what that final anticipated clawback is.
Thank you. Please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The big news for the police department is, as you recognize tonight, the retirement of Lieutenant London. That has given me the need to promote two people, one to lieutenant. So Lieutenant Sergeant Brent Green will be promoted to lieutenant effective November 1st, and Officer Keith Olson will be promoted to sergeant November 1st. So very excited for both of them, outstanding officers. It's going to be really fantastic. As Director Spidle mentioned, the police cars have come in. They have arrived. We ordered early in the year. They have now arrived, so they're being outfitted and fitted up so they can be deployed. And then I've got two officers that have gone through the academy and through field training, and they are, one has completed training, the other one is very close to completing training, so they'll be solo officers very shortly. So, some good news. Thank you.
So, okay, Mr. Wenger, Community Development Services.
Yes, Madam Mayor and Council. So we are ramping up our enforcement program. We were hoping to, well, I've directed our staff to issue three enforcement letters this week. We haven't quite got them out the door yet, but they will be issued tomorrow. That includes property on Garfield Avenue, and then another property on Baldwin Place, and another property on Layton Street. One of the things that delayed us in getting those letters out is we had yet a fourth violation pop up. So we're dealing with that on C Street, which was kind of an unpermitted demo, and working with that. And we actually had to call out a public works crew to assist with some barricades to keep the public safe. So thank you to the public works crew for helping us with that. But overall, we're starting to move into that second tier of enforcement, you know, after focusing on some big public safety buildings that were demoed earlier in the year, kind of moving into that second tier. In addition, we've also started enforcement of A-frame signage downtown, so we've notified all the business owners. We posted a notice in the Northern Light. We had our contract planning tech actually go door-to-door and deliver a very nice letter, something along the lines that we appreciate your business very much, but please, you know...
is that on private property? So that's on my property.
So the A-frame signs are primarily on public right-of-way that we're talking about. So we will be doing our initial sign sweep this Friday and getting those other letters out hopefully tomorrow.
Does this mean our compliance officer is back on the job?
And no, it does not mean that. We're using some contract temporary contract help to get that done. That remains a challenge in our department.
Only other comment. You'll see really nothing for that. I just want to know if you've got any updates on the town and tell them. Have you heard of anything on that property?
Mayor?
Yeah, all of the documents are signed. The letter of intent that the council authorized me to sign has been signed and delivered. And just last week or early this week, I signed our joint application to the Army Corps and to the state requesting to grant, I don't say grandfather, but to vest our property to the wetland entitlements that Mr. Klein has for his property. So that's signed. Everything that on our end is submitted into the state. Now it's a matter of hearing back from the Army Corps and Department of Ecology whether they approve the entitlements vesting to our property or not. If they do, I think there's a pretty good chance we have a project. If they don't, probably the opposite.
Okay, if you look at the calendars, you'll realize November the 11th is Veterans Day and the city offices are closed and there will be no council that day, so the council will be the following day, Tuesday, November the 12th at 6 p.m. where there will be a public hearing on the 2025 budget. Okay, council on finished business. Written public comment as always. Council new business and dialogue. Okay, then we go on to another executive session. The council will now meet in executive session to review the performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 42-30-1101G. The council will be in executive session until...
Let's go with 30 minutes. We can always extend that later.
Till 8 o'clock. Okay. The council is not expected to take further action following the executive session.
The council is extending the executive session for a period of 5 minutes till 8.05 p.m. Okay, the council is extending the executive session for a period of 5 minutes until 8.12. 10? 8.17. Okay. We've come back from executive session and no decision has been made, and therefore I will adjourn the meeting at 8:14.